Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Herman Pretorius. Let's get into the first news story of today. And this is reporting from the Auditor General's office and echoed in the media that over the last 5 years, the government has pumped 280 billion rand in terms of bailouts into state-owned enterprises, things like Eskom and SAA, as well as the numerous other state-owned enterprises. This was a report delivered by the Auditor General before the Standing Committee on Appropriations, SCOPA, in Parliament. And to make matters worse, not only has all this money been spent, but 70 billion of, at the same time that 280 billion was spent on these SMEs, 70 billion was irregularly spent. What does that mean? It means that the money was spent without complying with the rules on whether you're allowed to spend money or not. In other words, while we don't know for certain whether that was due to sloppiness or corruption, when there is corruption, it's almost always an irregular expenditure. So that's a pretty substantial chunk of all the money we've spent on these SOEs. Even worse, it's not just SOEs, but also a large number of national departments. 18 of the 41 national departments in government incurred irregular expenditure in each of the past 5 years. And according to the media, the Departments of Defense, Basic Education, Forestry, Fisheries and Environment, Correctional Services, Cooperative Governance were some of the main culprits for irregular expenditure. I will note here, very interestingly, that apart from defense, I believe every single one of those was given to an opposition party in the cabinet breakdown when the formation of the GNU. But anyway, let us first discuss the SOEs. Herman, what do you make of this? I mean, how did we get to a point where just such huge sums of money were not just being spent on these SOEs, which aren't performing well, but then was irregularly spent? In other words, wasted, not properly accounted for, or maybe even stolen?
Yeah, so I'm going to begin at a weird place for a discussion about this depressing state of affairs, and that is the innate statism of the National Party. The National Party, with its race-based policy and its idea that the state must be so massive and so substantial that it must interfere in social matters to a vast degree, led to economic isolation globally that at the end of the day created an economic statism. So going from, you know, social policy, the state must intervene, it ended up in economic policy, the state must intervene. And many of these SOEs are actually the remnants of South Africa, apartheid South Africa, desperately trying to cope with the type of economic isolation that apartheid imposed on us. And then, of course, the ANC as a, you know, pro-state, the state should be at the center of the economy party, gladly inherited these SOEs. And there is a case to be made for SOEs. You know, across the world, you can see some merit for state-owned enterprises. For example, a state-owned water company, I think generally is, in a water-poor country like South Africa, there's at least some justification for it, because if water is going to be completely commercialized, then there are certain parts of the country that are just not financially viable or commercially viable for water to be delivered. So the free market has a risk. I'm not saying it will not deliver, but it has a significant risk of not seeing the incentives of delivering, and a state-owned entity as a company, a sort of state-owned commercial entity, can then step into that space. But the problem here is that we have so many SOEs that exist for no reason other than legacy and ideology, and is starting to take money out of the productive side of the economy to subsidize the unproductive side of the economy. And you know how I know that? If these were productive commercial companies, they wouldn't need bailouts. The mere fact that they need bailouts, and the mere fact that those bailouts will be paid for by people who pay their taxes by adding value to the economy, is an indication that these entities are not value add. They are ideological. They are historical. They are vehicles for patronage, cronyism, corruption, cadres. And they are a deliberate disincentive on South Africans to think about the economy in a value-add, productive way. So it is depressing. And the billions and billions of rands add to the level of depressingness. But it goes deeper than what it's costing us in money terms. It goes in terms of the ideological and historical trap that these SOEs essentially present in the year 2024.
Yeah, exactly right. You know, government has, I mean, I think almost all of them have lost money, with the exception of, I think, the forestry company, which made a couple million back, whereas all the others are these huge money sinks. Now, you know, load shedding may have been ended for now, and, you know, if our luck holds and good management takes place, load shedding will hopefully never return, although that's yet to be seen. And yet, you know, the price we pay for that is that Eskom is losing an absolutely enormous amount of money still. It's just, you know, it's massively in debt. We've just got these problems all over the economy, and they're like giant vampires just sucking the life out of all of the productive activity in the country. And remember that it is not just people who pay income tax who are taxpayers. Even the poorest of the poor, if they are buying something that isn't basically, you know, basic foodstuffs, if they buy even one thing that's not covered by VAT exemption, they are paying VAT. They are paying a significant proportion of their income.
Or if they drive in a taxi, they're
exactly
a taxpayer.
They're paying
indirectly. They're paying taxes.
Exactly. So, you know, this is the money of absolutely everyone in the nation. Everyone has a stake in this, and the just complete lack of any sort of accountability that's taken place here. I mean, the fact that you can have such an enormous amount of money sort of spent over 5 years. And it kind of takes for it to all accumulate up into a news story like this. And tomorrow there'll be a different news story, and everyone will have forgotten it. So it is just horrific. But just on my second point that I made there, Herman.
And could I? Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Just if we're going to take the ANC's black industrialists, let's create some black industrialists and millionaires and billionaires. They could literally in the last 5 years have created, 2,700 black millionaires by just taking the money and giving it to people in the form of sort of helicopter cash. It would have been better for the economy to just have quantitative easing to the value of the billions and still say, look, we've created billionaires and millionaires, rather than going through the charade of saying, oh no, we're actually giving it to a company that does stuff. No, these companies are a net loss. We could have been better off if we had just given the money away.
Right, exactly. What we've essentially done is set the money on fire. Now, that observation I made at the end there about the departments, which are some of the main culprits of this, I do find it very interesting that those seem to have been the ones handed over to the opposition for the most part. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. I don't think it's just because of this, but it does make me wonder, Herman, whether Ramaphosa is hoping, perhaps recognizes some of the weaknesses within his own party and is hoping to get either the blame apportioned to opposition parties or some improvement made by just sort of handing these over to someone outside the ANC tent. What do you make of this?
So there's this perverse lurking awareness in the ANC of its own inferiority. And in terms of just governance competence. And in a way, that was what Mbeki used to trigger the liberalized, free market, pragmatic, whatever, economic policies that we saw under Trevor Manuel. Because Mbeki essentially said to the ANC, look, chaps, if we continue down this route, the IMF is going to have to step in. And the headlines will be, ANC liberation movement needs to be saved by white Western monopoly capital, global capital, and it will reflect badly on the ANC. So for that reason, we shall be fiscally austere. We will make sure that the ANC has a liberation movement, a proud black African liberation movement. We will fix the books to show that we can. not because perhaps, you know, it's a good thing and that's how the economy runs, but just in case, if we fail, it will be very embarrassing for us. And I think there's a similar play at work here that Ramaphosa has to acknowledge these failures in some way. Otherwise, it'll just continue reflecting badly on the ANC.
Right. And it's worth mentioning for those who can't remember or don't know that Mbeki's government did actually achieve a budget surplus. This was, you know, an amazing achievement that almost no one saw coming. There'd been this enormous rollout of a large welfare state, and yet still they managed to achieve this budget surplus in many ways just because they spent the money much more responsibly. Yes. And the benefits for that were clear to be, I mean, it's no coincidence that those are some of the best years in terms of job growth and economic growth that we've had in South Africa's history since 1994. But of course, you know, once the Zuma era began, that that dividend has been wasted. And in fact, we probably would have been in a much worse position now if not for those good years where the ANC had acted responsibly.
Perhaps just a final note on this, I want to refer to research done and published earlier this year by our colleague Gabriel Krauser, where he wrote a blueprint for growth paper for the IRR as the IRR series of how to get economic growth going. And in it, he unpacks what he calls the fiscal multiplier. And that is, for every rand the government spends, does the economy grow? And he found the opposite. In South Africa, the fiscal multiplier has turned negative. The more the state spends, the worse the economy gets. And the bailout is just a new version of that. Proof that South Africa, we shouldn't be thinking that, you know, we're rolling in cash. But there is a way to, from our current fiscal and debt position, get to a place of growth by cutting in the right areas, like 70 billion rands of irregular expenditure. It's not that we are flush with money, but it is that the fiscal situation can improve from this point for the socioeconomic situation to correspond.
Exactly right. This is a point that I make time and time again. South Africa doesn't have as much money as it would like, but our biggest problem is not having enough money. Spending the money we do have badly. And you see that across so many different government departments, education being, I think, first and foremost amongst all of them, where despite a relatively large amount of money being spent on it, so much is wasted on bad systems, incompetent bureaucrats, poor performing teachers, and just generally a dysfunctional education system that hurts people. Very briefly, in relation to that, we're just going to quickly talk a little bit about this next topic. So one thing that's been pretty contentious, I think pretty much with, I would say, I haven't seen polling on it, but I would suspect the majority of South Africans, is the so-called 30% pass rate for matric. Now, it's a little bit more complicated than that. To get pass matric, you need 40% in four subjects, and then you need 30% in some other subjects, including your home language, including subjects that are not your home language. But basically, this has been regarded as one of the sort of low standards that we set for ourselves in our matric system, and contributes to the fact that a lot of people get matric in this country but actually haven't been effectively educated. Now, the new Minister of Basic Education from the DA, Sibiwe Gorube, says that she has no plans, or at least the headline is that she has no plans to scrap the 30% matric pass rate yet. Now, if you actually read the story, rather than her kind of refusing to scrap this thing, she's just talking about creating an advisory council to inform unnecessary reforms. So it's very possible that this could come down the line later, I suspect, if she's actually given a free hand to reform the sector properly. But Herman, you wanted to spend a couple minutes just sort of discussing how this thing got implemented in the first place.
Yes, and sort of it is related actually to our first topic, and that is the idea that you can get upwards momentum by tinkering with the wrong side of the equation, as it were. If you think that an economy is, let's not figure out the supply side, let's manipulate demand, then you're going to end up in a situation where you have an unproductive economy, because you're not trying to see, right, what can we make sure supplies the market with what it demands? Rather, how can we put a thumb on the scale of demand? And the 30% pass mark idea is sort of that, but just in human capital. It's not how can we up the supply of people getting matric. It is how can we weaken the demand for that matric to be worth anything. It is sort of an attempt to fudge the numbers at large scale so as to look good without actually generating the skills production line that benefits South Africa and generation after generation coming through the schooling system, able to read, write, count, and make a contribution. Rather, it is a way to make ourselves feel good by saying, what looks good on paper? High pass marks. How can we get high pass marks? Well, high pass rates. How can we get high pass rates? By making it easy to pass. It's the wrong type of thinking. Rather than looking at the supply of skills, we are just saying, we'll adjust the demand. That's so toxic. It's so pathetic. And it is trapping post-apartheid generations in a new form of, to coin a phrase, a dom pass.
So, I mean, this is one of the ways that you really can create youth social discontent amongst young people. You say to young people, look, you've got your matric, and then they go out into the workplace and no one will hire them.
Yes.
And that is a recipe for people becoming angry, disenchanted with everything, and devaluing education. And as you say, it's exactly the wrong approach that we should be taking. All right. That's all the time we have for today. We hope you found the show interesting. That's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.